ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 103 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. I'm so glad you're listening. This week I have a fun interview with Greg Taylor, one of the creators behind Mask of the Red Panda at monkeybraincomics.com. He also does Decoder Ring Theater as well. We talk a lot about how the book came to be and how the radio theater is doing. And we also discuss some of the product he's been working on, including a now successfully completed Kickstarter project. You'll learn more about that as you listen to the interview. Now, I have to apologize in advance. Some of the recording kind of blitzed out on me across Skype, and it happens once in a while. If you're a Skype guy, you probably know that happens to you occasionally, and so I have to apologize about that. But if you give it a good close listen at times when it kind of breaks up a little, you'll get the gist of what's going on. I didn't want to hold the interview or try to record it again because he gave me so much good information about this whole series. I think you'll enjoy it. Then we go into news and previews. Of course, there's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show.
And now, Decoder Ring Theater presents the continuing adventures of Canada's greatest superhero, that scourge of the underworld, hunter of those who prey upon the innocent, that marvelous masked mystery man known only as the Red Panda! The Red Panda, mysterious masked marvel, hides his true identity of August Fenwick, one of the city's wealthiest men, in his never-ending battle against the forces of darkness and oppression. Together with his wife and partner, Kit Baxter Fenwick, who joins him in his quest, in the guise of the Flying Squirrel, he fights a private war that evildoers everywhere shall know justice at the hands of the Red Panda!
Okay, I want to welcome to the podcast Greg Taylor, creator of Mask of the Red Panda and other Red Panda adventures as well. The Mask of the Red Panda is available on monkeybraincomics.com, and I've come to know recently, really enjoying. How are you doing today, Greg?
I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
It's good to talk with you because, like I said, I enjoy the Red Panda stuff. What's going on right now, there seems to be like a revival in these pulp-type heroes. It seems like Dynamite's doing it and Dark Horse is doing it. Everybody seems to be using all these great things. And hey, I'm all for it. If it's a good story, it doesn't bother me. So I was glad to come across the Mask of the Red Panda on monkeybraincomics.com. And so I was just curious, how did this whole thing start? How did the character develop? You know, you've got your Decoder Ring Theater, too. I think that plays a part in all this. Why don't you go ahead and tell us how this all came to be?
Sure. Oddly enough, I mean, I think like a lot of fellas my age who grew up during one of the many old-time radio revivals, I feel like I grew up with this material, even though it was, you know, long gone before I was born. But it was out, you know, and certainly available in limited form on cassettes. Remember cassettes?
Oh, yeah.
And episodes of The Shadow and The Green Hornet, and just adored that stuff. And it wasn't until I was quite a bit older that I realized why the voice of Orson Welles in his films was so incredibly familiar to me. It's because I'd grown up with him as The Shadow. Mm-hmm. And went back and discovered all that material. And it was always, as an actor and a writer, something that I felt like I'd missed. Is this period of wonderful creativity and creating when audio drama was the popular art form. It was the thing that everybody heard. Then working with Decoder Ring Theater started as a very terrestrial bricks and mortar type theater company, an independent theater scene in Toronto, Canada, and did some radio themed works. Did the original Blackjack Justice was in fact a farce about a very bad day in the life of an old-time detective show called Blackjack Justice, and then later we went on to do the show. And we tried doing a six-episode pilot for a show that no one had requested this pilot. We just thought, you know, we'd make it and see what happened. And this was before all the innovations in digital recording, and so it was quite expensive to do. So it was the worst of all possible worlds. It was fun, but in many ways I'm glad that it didn't go anywhere because I made a tremendous number of mistakes. You know, you're trying to make something appeal to a broad audience, and so it becomes a parody, it becomes very silly. But in fact, you really just want to make something that is true to the thing that you would love to hear. Mm-hmm. Create something that sings to you, and it will find people that it means something to. And then podcasting came along, and all of the revolution in digital audio recording and mixing techniques that made something that was tremendously expensive something that was accessible. So at that point, I knew this was something that I really wanted to try, and spent a year preparing scripts and learning the actual skills required to post-produce these shows, and went back to the beginning with the Red Panda, and sort of abandoned the Sillyverse Red Panda stories as an alternate universe, and went back to tell a mystery man story in that classic vein of the 30s and 40s when everything was, you know, was gaslight, but there was still darkness everywhere, and there could be anything waiting in that darkness. This is the time when they weren't called superheroes. The idea was really developed that there must be someone out there who can save us. You know, and you think about, you know, the Depression, and even in those who had only been touched by it a little, there was that concern that everything could be taken away. That idea of the mystery man in the darkness, often a wealthy man who, in spite of that, protects the poor, and from that grows the idea of the super criminal and these mad plots. And, of course, along the way, I had inherited the love of the pulp magazine stories of the Shadow is very different from the Radio Shadow, and the Spider, and Doc Savage, and all of these wonderful classic characters, and a chance to just get in and play. We did 12 episodes of the Red Panda Adventures and 12 episodes of Blackjack Justice, and we thought that might very well be all that we ever do, but we started putting them out as a podcast, and immediately got right back into production because they found this wonderful and continually growing audience of people who were passionate about it. You don't need to be in the same city anymore to find a crowd. A crowd can be anywhere. And so that grew, and the thing that I've really enjoyed about writing, this was 2005 we went on the air, and we've been on continuously with loads of downloads and radio play on terrestrial stations and a lot of great things. And along the way, I've done some stories in the pulp novel form, Tales of the Red Panda series, and that was terrific fun, continues to be. But the thing that I've really enjoyed about writing the character is it's this simple sort of mystery man type character, but usually for one reason or another, and the main reason often being a plethora of writers and not that much editorial control, these stories often become just kind of either the same thing over and over, or they're continually rebooted or contradict each other. There was really very little change. It was the Shadow and his extremely unspecified relationship with his friend and companion, Margot Lane. And not that much ever changed. The Green Hornet evolved over time, but that was as politics demanded, almost. You know, eventually he did come out of hiding and was working with the government and things, or when Cato suddenly became very pointedly Filipino overnight. And those things changed, but there was no necessarily real growth. So be able to, as a single creator universe, play and tell this mystery man story from its origin in the early 30s and on into the war years and to its eventual conclusion, and tell the story from start to finish. Of course, you never want to stop the adventure long enough to, you know, this is not a soap opera, but very, very gradually the relationships between characters change and essential facts change, and it becomes this rich universe where you realize as a listener you've just spent these half-hour chunks digesting adventure, but along the way it's grown and grown on you in the process. So the one really missing thing, or one of the missing things, was the opportunity to bring this into the comic book world. And there's so much that within various inspirations for the Red Panda, you know, I've talked about some of them already, but a lot of those classic pulp heroes. But there's also, there's no getting around the fact that, you know, I grew up with Batman and all the classic heroes and Silver Age comics, and have since spent a lot of time with Will Eisner's Spirit, and to be able to explore that corner of the world in continuity, in the same continuity as the radio shows and as the novels, fit these new comic book stories that I've been able to create with Dean Kotz. When you're primarily writing characters for radio for years and in prose form, you know exactly what everyone looks at, what you want the universe to feel like, but particularly in the radio shows where I'm writing them and acting in them with the rest of the ensemble, but also doing the post-production work, you have a tremendous amount of control over your tiny universe. And then to say, okay, well, you know, show me what it looks like, Dean. And so many pages would come back and I'd say, wow, how in the few words that I described this panel in, did I so clearly describe to him what the Red Panda's secret lair looks like? Because it's exactly how I've always seen it. And I look, and there's virtually no description of it. I've left it almost completely open-ended in the thing. And he's just on the same page. It's a really, really wonderful, a joy for me to see, and hopefully for other people to read and experience.
You know, what inspired him to be called the Red Panda?
Well, you know, we never dealt with that in the show. And in the second of the novels, there's no moment where he's brooding in the study and a red panda bursts through the windows. That's it, I will become a red panda. And we did hint on it because from a master of the hypnotic arts with whom he studied in Tibet and part of the novel The Mind Master involved, and a hint of where that name comes from. But in reality, it was because many years ago, to tell the short version of the story, I received a terrible sunburn in the early spring when I was pasty white as I could be while wearing a pair of then fashionable wraparound sunglasses. So I was bright red with a white mask.
Oh.
And people said, oh my God, you look like a raccoon. And technically, I looked like a red panda.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I said it, it was like butter in my mouth. There's red panda, there's green hornet, there's green llama, there's blue beetle, there's all of these wonderful names. And immediately started doing the voice, which was a sillier me goofing around at the pub kind of version of the voice that is a mashup of my take on Orson Welles' Shadow combined with Adam West's Batman. And everything just kind of grew from there in a very strange way. It was many years later before we actually got to the version of the show that people know and the character that we know. But that name has always stuck. Really, when you think about it, they're all silly names.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like, there's a reason behind the name Batman, but it's a little bit silly. And I don't know if you've ever seen a Wolverine, but it is not really that intimidating an animal. I'm not saying I'd like to wrestle one, but as names go, you know, if you're interested in the character, you get past that, you move on. But it had that ring that was so beautiful.
Very cool. Now, of course, his sidekick is a girl, and she's called the Flying Squirrel, which, of course, I always think of Rocky when I think of flying squirrels.
Me too.
But, is her name Rocky by any chance?
No, I grew up on Rocky and Bullwinkle, man. I watch it now, and I'm like, what was I on? But it all made perfect sense to me at the time. And it was, again, kind of something that we inherited, but from just different versions of the story that had evolved before we actually launched into it. But it really comes down to Kit Baxter. The genesis of the character, she's a mashup of Margot Lane and Kato and Robin and so many things. And by the time a finished script was recorded, became much more in her own thing. But at the start, she was his trusty driver and sidekick in his war against crime. And there's that little bit of a His Girl Friday thing going on there. The show has been described as an adventure story with a twist of screwball comedy between the two of them that is always wrapped up in it. And I mean in the sense of those movies where there's a lot of banter and that little bit of sort of unspecified will they or won't they kind of thing that we never stop to spend any time on very much because it's not a soap opera. And because he's the scientist and the spooky hypnotic powers and things, it comes to her if you want her to not be the girl hostage, which I never did. I allowed her to be in the radio show over the course of 95 episodes so far. I've allowed her to be kidnapped exactly once, and she escaped before she was rescued. And just that character that you always wish, particularly with female characters in comics, and in the pulps, the female characters are almost universally paper thin. A lot of guys who were wonderful writers of action and mystery and plots and just their female dialogue is excruciatingly painful. And they knew that, and they didn't write it that often as a result. But even then, like in the Shadow with Margot, you're like, why is he hanging around with this girl who's not in the costume and who maybe did like two or three useful things? He needs someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
But how can it be something more and someone that you can care about? And there are all sorts of people who I know very well who look at it as the Adventures of the Flying Squirrel and her sidekick, the Red Panda. because they become very attached to Kit, who is the other side of the huge economic divide of that era, where August Fenwick is a multimillionaire or more who devotes his resources for his own reasons to a war on crime. And Kit has very little patience for the rich and very little sympathy for the people who are of a privileged background. And so many of those classic episodes of radio shows are also devoted to protecting people who had vast resources from criminals. And so we wanted to find some balance to that and have a lot of fun on the way. They climb sheer surfaces with their static shoes. And that kind of thing is okay as long as you stick with it and make it consistent. Because almost nothing that you see in, you sit through an episode of the Mythbusters and realize that really almost nothing that Batman has would do anything but rip his arms off. But what fun is that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we have a good time with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because I know you live in Canada, and I noticed that the Red Panda is in the Depression-era Toronto.
Yes.
Although I have to say, reading the book, I didn't know that. I couldn't tell that very much because the layout of everything in the city is very similar to American cities. I just thought that's one of the things that makes him unique from the other heroes was that he's in a location that you don't find a lot of masked mystery men going around in.
It's true. It doesn't show up all that often, and I've always wanted to stay away from making the stories just a reaction to American comics. Or, I mean, when you get into the war years and there is a different perspective. And it was quite some time, actually, after we were working on the Mask of the Red Panda comics that I realized that we never actually said the word Toronto anywhere in the comic, and it wasn't a conscious choice. It's just we don't generally bludgeon the reader with it or the listener with it. There are certain references in it. I think at one point he's putting a specimen of an otherworldly creature into a giant jar of formaldehyde, and he says, where would I get one later if I needed it? Eaton's? Which, if you grew up in Canada within a certain, Eaton's was a department store empire. So it's there if you know it. Dean is from Philadelphia. When we started working together, I dug out a book that I had used when, because of course you can get away without describing very much on the radio, but when I moved into the novels, I got a book called Toronto Between the Wars, which is a wonderful collection of photographs of the city as it was at that time, and found another copy of it and sent it to him. And just for reference, without a desire to necessarily pick out any specific landmarks, because most of the things that people would recognize as being Toronto now, it didn't necessarily exist then. You see there's certain iconic towers that, they just weren't there. And you're exactly right. The layout was very much like any American city of the era.
Mm-hmm.
We don't dwell on it. We don't necessarily wear it on our sleeve, because then it becomes something very self-conscious. Rather than something that just happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, how did you decide to go to monkeybraincomics.com, and what made you create a comic book?
Really wanted to see them in that world, and I do feel that the world that we've created also lends itself to, as much as you can immerse yourself in hours and hours and hours of these radio shows, which are free at decoderringtheater.com and free to listen or to download or whatever you please. It has become its own expanded universe, and you can live there, but you can also pop in for a short story, and you don't really have to be in any particular order. And it really felt like it lent itself to the medium, and it was something that I really wanted to see happen. And also, a lot of listeners were just bugging the bejeepers out of me to do a comic book because they wanted one. So I wrote the script and went through the normal processes of trying to get someone who is a commercial publisher to say, yes, this is a nice script. We will make it into a comic book for you. Some, I think, fairly typical naivete there. But along the way, I loved the script, and I really enjoyed writing. Writing for comics is so inordinately fussy in that there's the structural limitations of form, and they're not limitations. It's what the structural demands of the form is what I'm trying to say, is that you're writing, and you must always be thinking of the artist and giving them enough room to work by not writing too many words. How many words can I put on this page? How does it flow from one panel to the next? How does it link to the next page? In a way, it's almost like poetry, because each page wants to come to its own natural coda within the scene, and the scene is this many pages, and, you know, your panels and your balloons and the way the words flow, and it's so, I know that sounds like an incredible pain in the arse, but no, it's so much fun to write and to play with, and so many different things to think about and different ways to stretch your muscles as a writer, and I enjoyed it a great deal, and eventually just decided, all right, well, we're just going to make this book, and then shot it and connected with Dean, and that was fantastic, and then, of course, you get closer to a finished issue, and think, all right, well, now we really have to start looking for what the heck are we going to do with this. And it was a 3-issue story, so we weren't tied into an unlimited run, and tremendously, tremendously fortunate in that Chris Schweitzer, who is the creator of the Krogan Adventures stories, is, well, I was a friend, but he was at the time, originally just a listener, who contacted me and said I had made some lateral reference in one of the pre-show announcements to the spirit and the old Christmas spirit. So this was before one of our Christmas episodes. He did a dedication to Will Eisner in that episode. And he said, oh, well, if he's talking about Eisner, he must be into comics. And he made contact and sent me the first of his Krogan Adventure books, which along the way led to us doing, as we do at Dakota Ring Theater, we do right now 24 episodes a year. 12 of them are The Red Panda, 6 of them are Blackjack Justice, and 6 of them are other scripts by other writers on different themes as we go over. And Chris did a set of 6, which we're running right now on the 15th of each month, that are an expansion of the Krogan Adventures world. So that's fantastic. And we've done those recording sessions, and I said, you know, Chris, I've been working on this, and I just wanted to buy in your opinion before I start, like, just flogging and sending this around. Is there a suggestion? If there's not, it's okay, you know, but is there a suggestion? And he said, yeah, can I show this to some people? And I said, brother, do whatever you please. Yes, show it to whoever you want. And the people that he showed it to was Chris and Allison at Monkey Brain. Mm-hmm. And thank goodness they liked what they saw, and they wanted to see more and to have it be a part of what they were working on. But what an incredible environment to land in. I mean, you know, first of all, what an eclectic stable of pros working on vastly different books for Monkey Brain, and a really just a glorious make the book that you want to make the way you want it to be kind of environment, and which is, well, not very common, I think, in the industry, is fair to say, but also as that foray into that whole world of writing for comics is a wonderful, wonderful way to make that transition. So it's been fantastic.
Well, I've enjoyed the first, I guess it's a mini series. You've got the 3 issues. It's just a wonderful story, and it feels more like The Shadow than Batman or others to me, because you've got supernatural foes involved, and then the movie of The Shadow, he had to fight supernatural things, which I still don't understand, but the book makes a lot of sense, and it's great fun. The art is great. I don't even notice sometimes that it's black and white, because it pulls me in so much, and the pacing is so quick, so it's just a great story. The first 3 issues of the miniseries is completely out now, so if somebody wants to check them out, I highly recommend them, because it's called Mask of the Red Panda, and you go to Comixology, you can get them there. And I just want to let you know, it was a fun story. It was a great read. Are you going to put this out in print eventually?
Yes, that's the hope. I don't actually know what I'm allowed to say, but I think that it's close to being able to say things, and okay, then it would, if that played out the way that that I hope that it would be in the new year. Mm-hmm. If you'd rather not wait, as you say, they're on Comixology, and all told, each issue of that first miniseries is 32 pages of sequential story for 99 cents. So you really can't lose.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I hope that in the new year we'll be seeing a print edition of that, and also more digital issues coming out and oh. more stories.
Oh, so I take it to mean you have maybe another miniseries in the works or an idea?
What we're working on is a Kickstarter campaign for a video comic, we're calling it. Not a motion comic, because it's not the bad animation of motion comics.
Hi, this is Greg Taylor, here for myself and Dean Kotz, to tell you a little bit about Mask of the Red Panda, a full-cast video comic, which is our Kickstarter campaign in support of taking our pulp adventure comic book, Mask of the Red Panda, to a whole new level. We released our first three-part story through Monkey Brain Comics earlier this year. You can see some of Dean's fantastic work on that book here. The heroes of our story have made the leap from full-cast radio adventures over on Decoda Ring Theater's Red Panda Adventures series, and we heard from a lot of listeners that they wished they could hear the voice cast from the radio series while they enjoyed Dean's terrific sequential art. And the answer is, of course you can. Mask of the Red Panda was really well received. We had some terrific reviews from Comic Book Resources and Bleeding Cool and IGN and others. You can see excerpts from some of those reviews here. And there are links on the Kickstarter page that will take you to the full reviews. This full cast video comic will take you through the unlettered artwork by a process much more advanced than the one you're seeing here, and marry the visuals to a full audio version created by the gang at Decoda Ring Theater. It won't be a Red Panda animated feature, but it might be as close as we ever get, and at any rate, it's going to be awesome. So please take a look around. We hope you like what you see. If you're already a reader of the Red Panda's adventures, or a listener, or both, we hope you're excited by the prospect. If this is all new to you, please have a look around, kick the tires, check out the debut story, and we hope you'll agree that the world needs more two-fisted pulp justice. Thank you very much for your consideration.
In fact, no animation. We're sort of Ken Burnsing over Dean's art and having the voice cast of the radio show. Because a lot of listeners said, wow, I wish I could have the cast of the radio show and hear them while I'm looking at this art. I'm like, well, actually, we can do that. So we put together this Kickstarter both to create that product, but also as a way of stretch goal on the entire thing has always been to make some more books and do the work to create those. So what we're probably looking at is there is a reason why no one is doing 32-page stories for 99 cents on Comixology. it's a lot of work, and by the time people are done buying it through the app and things, you're like, But moving to something that's a little bit more of the standard digital length and doing two-part stories rather than something that just goes on endlessly and you're like, well, are they going to stick? Are they going to finish? So that you get something that over the course of two issues is a 24-page story and do that on an ongoing basis and hopefully build some momentum for the new book and the old and the radio show and everything all together.
Mm-hmm. I remember seeing about the Kickstarter project on Twitter. I started to follow you on Twitter after I read the book, and I started to notice that you were doing that. That's unusual. You don't see much of that going on today, so I like that you're breaking new ground like that.
It's something that the uber goal is, let's make more comics. But there is this wonderful fan base that's been built up, and people who are passionate about these characters already and have that connection to the radio show means that we can take a risk and go there and say, well, here's one project, but it has another goal, and we already have a voice cast. Now, most people, if they're producing they wouldn't necessarily know where would I get the actors and how would I mix it into a soundtrack. Another member of our ensemble, who is in fact, among other characters, the main announcer of the Red Panda show, Stephen Burley, he is by training, part of his profession, is able to in film and in video creation, and is giving us the best friend rate, which is fantastic and means that we can have this, what I'm hoping and I'm sure will be this very professional final product without taking the entire resources that came out of the Kickstarter to do it. So it leaves some in the kitty to go above and beyond and to do even more. But it's going to be fun. I mean, as we said, you know, it's not going to be a Red Panda animated feature, but it may be as close as we ever get. So by gosh, we're going to enjoy it.
Okay. Well, that's great. I'm looking forward to it. Should plans go through correctly and everything come to fruition, do you know how it's going to be distributed?
The video comic?
Yeah.
The first thing that we're going to do is, we're about at this point about 207% funded. So It's happening.
Oh, great.
And there will definitely be more Red Panda comics coming out of that as well. And for starters, we're going to get her made, and we're going to get it in the hands of the people who have backed the Kickstarter, and then see if there is something that it can be in support of a print edition with all of our different partners, and see what's going to support efforts and not be doubling up or interfering with them. So at the moment, the thing that we know for sure is that the people who've put from $10 to a lot more behind this Kickstarter are going to have it in their hands, and then we'll go from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's great because it's a lot of fun. It's a great book to read. If you get a chance to go out to monkeybraincomics.com, it'll direct you to Comixology where you can pick these good things up. And, God, it's just a lot of fun to read, especially now that the Pulp Heroes are back. It's just a perfect thing. I mean, your timing couldn't be better, in my opinion, to have this.
Thrilled with some of the stuff that's coming out now, too. I mean, and it was super exciting when Dynamite's Mask came out. Yeah. And there's issue one, and I read that on Wednesday morning in the office with the other fellow who works in my office, who is also a comics fan. And we read through it and we're like, wow, I really enjoyed it. And I looked back at the writing credits and realized it was Chris Robertson from Monkey Brain. And I had my very first I know that guy moment, having just read and really enjoyed that sort of Justice League level team up of Pulp Heroes. But there's a lot of great stuff out there. IDW is doing Spirit and Rocketeer crossover. I love all of those words. I have tingles just saying them. For people who love those kind of classic stories, there's so much great material out there now. It's a joy.
Great. Do you have other projects, by the way, that you're working on? I know you're doing Dakota Ring Theater, and that probably keeps you pretty busy. And like you said, you're talking about more Red Panda coming. Are there other projects that you do that we should be aware of?
Well, and you're right, there's quite a lot through Dakota Ring between Red Panda and Blackjack Justice, and there's been, for the last few years, there's been most years a novel come out that was related to and sort of ties into some of the characters. A couple of years ago did a Blackjack Justice mystery novel told in alternating narrative voices, private detectives who don't always agree and don't like each other very much. It is the nutshell version of that, and both in radio and in print. And another novel out last year called Finn's Golem, which is also a detective story, but it sounds so commonplace when you say not too distant dystopian future, but gosh, there's so much fun to play with. So fun to write, and just to be able to exercise kind of that dark streak a little bit, because with Dakota Ring Theater, we very much adhere to, in many ways, the broadcast standards of many years ago. They're quite clean. The network never would have let you write a character like Kit, who is, in frequent physical peril and is, in fact, the butt kicker on the team and the one with the slightly sadistic streak. You'd never get away with that, and you'd never get away with very much that Trixie Dixon Girl Detective says, but not because it's dirty, it's just because it wasn't done. No one wants to hear about that. That's not a nice girl at all. So to be able to, with Finn's Golem, really kind of go to a darker place and a guy who wakes up and really has no particular idea who he is, but as he goes through the story, he's finding out about himself and who he is as he is finding out about the situation and realizing that he is not, in fact, a very nice person at all. Mm-hmm. And that discovery was a lot of fun to write, so... Yeah, and oddly enough, and I'm just working on an interactive kids book for an outfit up here that approached me about it. It's called Capes in the Family, and that is, I don't quite know how to describe it. It's not available yet, but that's coming out. So that was a fun change of gears for me as well.
Very cool, very cool. Let's mention where people can get stuff. You can go to DakotaRingTheater.com. Now, of course, that theater has an R-E on the end of it, .com.
Yeah, although, if you go to ER.com, I mean, I have that URL as well, and it will just reach out to you. So,
well, that's good.
You're safe there.
Okay, good.
Or on Facebook, we're Decoder_Ring on the Twitter that the kids love so much. And monkeybraincomics.com or directly at comixology.com and search for Mask of the Red Panda. Mm-hmm. The Tales of the Red Panda books. Well, Amazon.com has got you covered there. Or there's more information and reviews and things. If you go to, there's a books page at DecoderRingTheater.com. And even though they're not really, strictly speaking, a Decoder Ring joint, they're related enough that we get a page there. And that's great.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So monkeybraincomics.com, look for Mask of the Red Panda, and Decoder Ring Theater is where we go. I wish you much success because I really was addicted to Mask of the Red Panda. I'm dying to see more. So I'm really looking forward to the product you're going to be producing in the future. So much success.
Thank you so much, Wayne. That's fantastic.
Until next time, when Decoder Ring Theater brings you the further thrilling adventures of Canada's greatest superhero, this is Stephen Burley reminding you DecoderRingTheater.com is your address to adventure!
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. It's time to check out the news in the comics universes, and there's some interesting stuff going on. For example, the word has just come out that Villains Month in September was a big win for DC Comics and actually led to an overall big industry gain. How about that? I was actually kind of skeptical about Villains Month, you know, how many people actually want to buy things having to do with certain villains or not. And so I approached it with a lot of trepidation, but boy, it apparently was a huge win in the 2013 September sales chart. And I find that interesting. Diamond Comics Distributors said on Friday morning that DC Comics scored 45.17% in unit share and 40.39% in dollar share. That's compared to Marvel's 29.83% in unit share and 28.49% in the dollar share. Now, this is when I always miss Gianluca Glaser being around. He can explain these things in layman's terms much better than I can. So we'll stick to a lot of the facts as we go through this. Now, one of the interesting things that happened was there were new titles shipped, and DC actually monopolized that as well by shipping 155 new titles during the month of September, and Marvel had 99. Now, of course, you remember a lot of the books had 0.1s and 0.2s and 0.3s and 0.4s that month, so I'm not surprised by that. It also can be said that DC left money on the table for themselves and comic book retailers, given that the publisher was unable to meet the retail demand for the 3D covers. You all might remember that one of the issues that had one of the 3D covers on it, they had trouble at the press, and so those people who had gotten the 3D covers had actually rushed out to eBay to sell them. So I guess that was a sign that this was a big deal. In fact, there's another sign we'll get to before too long that's another big deal. The top-selling book in September was Forever Evil, and that was followed by Infinity No. 2 and Infinity No. 3 in the same spots from Marvel. Actually, Marvel and DC split the top 10 5-5. That doesn't happen very often. The best-selling graphic novel of the month was Images East of West Volume 1, The Promise, trade paperback from Jonathan Hickman, who also, by the way, writes Marvel's Infinity, and Nick Dragata. And the word is, overall, the DC event helped sales rebound from what was a rare down month in August. Again, with September 2013 gaining nearly 27% in dollar sales. Wow. And 23.4% over a year ago, September 2012. The year-to-date for 2013 now stands at 10.43 over 2012. That's quite a jump. You know, 10%, that's pretty good. I'll fill out the top 10 comics. X-Men Battle of the Atom number 1 was number 4. Batman 23.1 The Joker number 5. Number 6 is Batman 23.2 The Riddler, which has a tie-in, of course, to all the stuff that's going on in Zero Year. Then there's Mighty Avengers number 1 is 7. Batman 23.4 Bane at number 8. Avengers 19 at number 9. And rounding out the top 10 was a book I particularly enjoyed, Batman 23.3 with the Penguin. That was a great book. If you got a chance to read that, the Penguin's not the wah-wah-wah he used to be. He's a lot more powerful and a lot more sinister than he used to be. So I kind of like that. Good updating of the character. the rest of the graphic novels in the top 10. The second one is Justice League Volume 3, The Throne of Atlantis hardcover. Then number 3 is Star Wars Volume 1 and The Shadow of Yavin trade paperback. Then we get to number 4, The Walking Dead Volume 9 hardcover. Then 5, The Walking Dead 100 project trade paperback. No sign of The Walking Dead number 1, but I'll bet you during October, when the show is back on, we'll see that first volume come popping back into the top 10s again. Then number 6, Justice League Volume 2, The Villain's Journey trade paperback. Saga Volume 1 and Volume 2 are number 7 and 8. Number 9 is My Little Pony Friendship is Magic Volume 2 trade paperback. And the number 10 is the hardcover version of the first volume of Superior Spider-Man. That still creeps me out, believe it or not. So how will things go after a big September? We'll find out next month. Now, tied into the success of Forever Evil is a new 18-part crossover that's starting in October. And it tells you how well Forever Evil did. It's going to be called Forever Evil Blight. And it's going to run through March. There will be 18 issues that will go over through Justice League Dark, Constantine, Trinity of Sin Pandora, and Trinity of Sin The Phantom Stranger. It'll all begin with Justice League Dark number 24 out on October 23rd. Now, what this series is going to do is introduce a new antagonist called Blight. He's described by DC editor Bob Harris as the physical manifestation of the significantly enhanced levels of evil in the universe. Along with Blight's Zatanna, Constantine, Swamp Thing, Nightmare Nurse, and the Trinity of Sin, which includes, of course, Pandora, Phantom Stranger, and The Question, are all named by DC as major players in the story, taking on the new threat presented by Blight. DC's promising major changes to the status quo of all the books involved in this Blight event. Though not previously mentioned by name, the crossover will encompass multiple previously solicited issues. There's a long list, and I won't read that to you. If you want to find out which specific ones are in there, I'm sure there'll be little cards. You could go to the DC.com website, and I'll bet they'll give you more information. But if you thought Forever Evil was a success, you are so right. It is going to go on for months, looks like. So that'll be an interesting thing, spinning out of it. I guess when something works, you stick with it. Coming out is also the Batman The Dark Knight Trilogy Collector's Edition. Now, it's on Blu-ray, but a lot of people are saying this is the kind of thing that a Batman fan who has a Blu-ray player and who enjoyed the movies will find this a worthwhile buy. What it has in it, there's terrific new special features, there's a terrific presentation, and a deeper than ever look into the series. It'll make you fall in love with the films all over again, is what one critic said. So I would highly recommend it. I'm going to be looking for it. It's in stores now, and it costs $99. You can get it on Amazon for about $80. Of course, you got to pay shipping. So something that the Bat fans among us, myself included, would probably like to have. Then we get to Dark Horse announcing a Skyman miniseries from Joshua Hale Fialkoff. What's interesting is if you've been reading Captain Midnight, there is a current hero or character called Skyman, and he's apparently going to get his own series, and I'm looking forward to that. I appreciate the pulp heroes, as we've talked about earlier, and I like the idea of introducing a new character. So he's going to be kind of fun. The series focuses on the character who has suffered an embarrassing defeat at the hands of Captain Midnight, and he accidentally kills an innocent man while he's intoxicated. This leads to the Skyman program needing a new face for their initiative, which they find in U.S. Air Force Captain Eric Reed, a wounded and frustrated veteran seeking a new lease on life. Looks good. If it has anything to do with Captain Midnight, I'm going to be on it. So I think you'd like that book too, just like me. We'll find out together how this goes. And that's a wrap for the news this week. Let's have a look at the comics that are coming out on October the 9th that I'm looking forward to. Of course, if you want a complete list, go to majorspoilers.com on Monday, and there will definitely be a complete list there for you to look through. Starting off with Dark Horse Comics, there's an interesting book, ElfQuest Special Final Quest One-Shot, $5.99. I've been a long-time fan of ElfQuest, and if you have too, I'm sure you're going to want to pick this up, because boy, that looks good. Then there's also Mind Management Hardcover Volume 2, The Futurist, for $19.99. I hope you're reading that book too. That is a wonderful comic, and I think you should be picking it up. We get to DC, and we get to Astro City number 5, a favorite of those people who don't happen to like the New 52. Then there's Batgirl 24, Batman 24, which is a $6.99 issue, and the combo pack is $7.99, so there must be extra good stuff in there. I can't wait for that. There is Constantine number 7, Forever Evil, Arkham War number 1, Green Lantern Corps 24, Katana number 8, Nightwing number 24, and Stormwatch number 24. Got a lot of 24s this month. Suicide Squad, Superboy, and the debut of Superman Wonder Woman number 1 for $3.99. I'm looking forward to that too. And of course, there's World's Finest number 16 as well. So those are all good books from DC. We go to Image Comics next, where there's several books that I really like. America's Got Powers, which seems to come out quarterly. Number 7 is out. Then there's Chew number 37 from John Layman, a favorite of mine. And Ghosted number 4 from another favorite of mine, Joshua Williamson. And then there's, of course, one I can't leave out too. It's another favorite, Hoax Hunters number 11 by Michael Morrissey and other good people. So that's a great book. I hope you're getting that one too. Then there's a Walking Dead number 1 10th Anniversary Edition $5.99. I know there's a lot of people who love to collect those lovely different versions of Walking Dead, so you might want to look for that. But there's also going to be issue number 115, and it's got, about 10-15 covers on it. So all I care about is getting the one so I can read it. I don't care about the multiple covers. Then we get into Marvel. We get into the now-completed Dexter comic series number 4. Maybe if you're missing that show, you might want to pick up the comic. And there's also Infinity number 4, that event continues on. From other comics and graphic novels, we get a second printing of Black Bat number 5. Oh, I hope you guys are reading that one, because boy, what a good one that is. Such good stuff. He's like Batman, but he's not, so that's a good thing about it. He has a very unique twist on the character. There's Deathmatch number 10 from Boom Studios, another favorite of mine. I'm looking forward to that greatly. I wish that book could go on forever. I really like it. It's kind of got a Hunter's Game feel to it, but very unique, so I like that. There's Journey number 5, written by J.T. Krull. There's Lord of Mars number 3 from Dynamite Entertainment. And The Owl number 4. Oh boy, I can't wait for that. Look for me to write a review on majorspoilers.com this week of that. It's a good book. I had a chance to read a preview copy. Boy, I liked it. This is the conclusion of the miniseries. And then there's Warlord of Mars number 28. I always enjoy that book. Such great stuff. And those are the books that I'm looking forward to on Wednesday, October 9th. And that brings to a close this episode. Be sure to be back next week when, as always, I'll have news, reviews, previews, and interviews. But until then, keep reading your comics.